bird.
It's a plane.
Well, hello, beautiful.
Listen up, casuals.
Cowabunga! You got a plan.
I'm afraid my protocols are being overridden.
Game over, man.
Listen up, casuals. This is Rocco.
And this is Chris.
And welcome to another hair-raising adventure, if you will, or hell-blazing adventure, if you will.
Ooh,
that's... you see what I did there? Yeah. Just takes me a second. I ease in. But anyway, with our good friend Constantine.
Yes, John Constantine, the Hellblazer. This is a good one, I think, for Listen Up Casuals Dark, what we've dubbed our third season. So we're talking about vigilantes, assassins, sorcerers like tonight. And I think we also decided that we're going to do Ghost Rider this season, which, you know, with the 50th anniversary, that's a good idea. So,
yeah, yeah. I love this anti-hero, you know, adding something new here to our normal slate of heroes is the reluctant heroes, maybe.
Perhaps. You know, there's so many of them too, which is great. But we're picking the best and the ones that we know best. And we hope that you learn something tonight.
Yes, yes, exactly, exactly. But before we get to our friend John Constantine, Chris, this was a holy weekend for comic book dwellers, if you will. And that was Free Comic Book Day, which was just this past Saturday. And we were just talking about this off air and our disappointment. Chris, did you go to this?
I didn't. I had planned to, but I got caught up doing house stuff that day. I didn't really want to go out. I've had, you know, it's the end of the year for my job. It's been kind of crazy. So I let adulthood kick in and did not support my local comic shop, unfortunately. But I wish I would have. There were some issues I really wanted to snag. I heard that, you know, a lot of places had a good time with it and looked like a lot of fun from what I've seen in the socials and whatnot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I did not go to my local one, but I was doing Critical Mass Abroad, my other show, and wait till that episode comes out. But I digress. I did not go to Free Comic Book Day because of this.
And you had a much better reason than me.
Yeah, but like I was really mad about it. He had hired a character artist to come in, and for like a certain amount of money, he would draw like freehand like characters. And he was offering a discounted rate for Free Comic Book Day. And I was like, great, dude, thanks so much for inviting that guy while I was freaking on my trip. Like, I know this trip once a year, and this is when it is. But anyway, he did have a nice little pile for me from Free Comic Book Day. He's like, yeah, man, just take all these. Don't worry about it. And then he kind of pulled some stuff for my kids, too. He's like, oh, your son will like this and your daughter will like this. So I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And just, you know, that was nice. So when I went to get my pull, yeah, it is. It is. Yeah.
So I was happy. That's great business, man. That means, you know, at least he knows and hooks you up as a customer who supports him.
Yeah. The only thing that sucks, and it wasn't in his or really any comic book owner's control, was there was a Spider-Man 2 comic that came out that day, I believe.
Yeah, it was a free issue, and it was like highly popular, and people were going to multiple stores just to grab them and then throw them up on eBay or send them in to get graded. It's kind of disgusting, honestly. You know, I sell things on eBay. I have my own business, but that's that kind of shit. Come on, man. It's like that's a day for the kids. Not for your greedy asses to go around and try to make profit off it. It's Free Comic Book Day for a reason.
Exactly, exactly. And that's another thing about the dude I go to. He usually does like a one per person thing. Like, especially if it's something like that. Yeah. No, I can sell you one. He's done it to me before on something I tried to buy two of. And he's like, listen, man, like, he wasn't a dick about it. But it's just like, hey, you know, one per person. A lot of people want these.
Well, that's the thing. You want to be able to hook the people up when they come to the store for that reason. They're there. You know, people are coming out of woodwork normal people that aren't really coming to the shop on a weekly basis, and then they're bringing their kid down there to because they heard about this free comic book day. And that's how you build a new customer base, fan base, whatever. And it's, you know, that's smart. The place around here that I usually go to for free comic book day has the same policy. It's just nice. One per, and you can usually only pick like 3 or 4 books.
Okay.
So you're limited to even that.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Like, that's great. Usually, like, if I go in on free comic book day, then it's like you could take like 2 or 3, like you said. But then the shit that doesn't like sell out. If I come back like later that week, he's like, dude, just go through that box. Like, take whatever you want because nobody took these.
If there's the Star Trek one, will you grab that for me?
Yeah, I'll.
Next time you go in there?
Yes, I will do that. Look at that. Casuals, look at that. Two comic book friends helping each other out.
That's it.
Which brings us to our next segment, Chris. What are you reading?
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you asked. I have, you know, I usually share my pulse with you. It's been kind of a, like I said, end of the year stuff for school.
Yeah.
So I just finally took a look at what I pulled for this week. So there's some good titles. I got Tom King's Danger Street #6 mm-hmm. with a really cool, like, I don't know, what is it? Like Fruit Loops cover with Darkseid eating cereal. I thought this was going to be a variant when I first saw it, but it's actually the cover A.
Oh, wow.
This is awesome. So I really like stuff Tom King does. I got Green Lantern #1. It's a new series that's launched, part of the Dawn of the DCU. And let's see, I think we're going right back to the Hal Jordan stuff. It's by Philip Kennedy Johnson, who's one of my favorite writers. You know of him. And then with Jeremy Adams on R. Montos, Zero Monk Eco as well. But this is, you know, this is just kind of a new starting point for Green Lantern. I like this. They're going back to that, like, character-centric storytelling with less crossovers. So
yeah,
we'll see how long they stick to that. And then also, I'm a big fan of Sean Murphy's The White Knight Verse, if you want to call it that. They have a new series that's coming out right now called Generation Joker. And that's going to be with Murphy, Katana Collins, and Clay McCormack.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Have you read White Knight yet?
No, I have not. For some weird reason, and you know I read pretty much everything Batman, I have not picked up any White Knight.
I've told you before, it's it reminds me of like Batman Fast and Furious is definitely referenced in there. I think Sean Murphy's really into cars and stuff, and so the stuff he does is really neat.
Oh,
in
wow.
That first issue, it's just like it's a really neat and different take on the Batman mythos, and a little bit of an Elseworld tale. But now it's spawned this whole universe of different books. So this is like the fourth or fifth series from it.
Yeah, I've noticed there's a lot. There's a lot of it.
Yeah. Marvel side of things, I got Ghost Rider #14.
Me too.
Percy's run. I also have Star Trek Defiant #3 as we approach the Day of Blood crossover, the very first crossover in Star Trek comics.
Nice.
This is very Deep Space Nine centric characters, which is my favorite series. So pretty excited to read that. Amazing Spider-Man #25. I've been collecting these Disney 100 variants. So this one is the New Avengers from the Brian Michael Bendis, I think, wrote it. But it's like classic covers, but with Disney characters. And so there's 12 of them this year for the 100th anniversary. So I've been trying to get them all.
Oh, wow.
And I'll get them graded.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens with them.
There you go.
Then last up, 2 indie books, Murder Inc., Murder Inc., Jagger Rose #1. This is a Brian Michael Bendis story. So this is a little bit of continuation. He's doing it with Dark Horse.
Okay.
And that's with Take Soma and Michael Avon Oeming on art. And then last up, this is, I'm very long-winded on this week. There's a cool book called Something Epic. The first issue came out. There's a bunch of variants that are like movie poster homages.
Okay.
And so the first issue is like Terminator 2. Mm-hmm. And so it's like that classic poster. This is by Szymon Kudrowski, who looks like he's doing writing and the art as well on it. So this looked like a really neat book. If anybody wants to look into that, I'll leave a link in the show notes.
Okay.
What about you, man? I'm sorry it took up all that time.
No. Comics this week. It's okay. I read some this past week, but what I do have to say is that I just read Batman 135, number 135.
You mean 900?
And it's really 900, legacy speaking. It's Batman Legacy 900. And I have to say, it is probably one of the best comics, single issues, I've read in a very, very long time. I read it last night, finally. And I have to say, it was great. It was really, really good. I want to dedicate an episode of talking about that one issue.
Okay.
Yeah, that's how good it was.
Yeah, I'd be willing to always do that or a series or change it up.
Yeah, well, it was because it was 900, they did like a big thing, so it was a double issue.
It like was a lot very of long. Different stories in it, like one it just one big story.
One big story, but the thing is so Batman has been running two stories in every issue, the main story and then a side Tim Drake story. Has to do with the comic, but it's a separate issue within that issue. Batman has done that consistently.
Parallel story?
Correct.
Okay.
Now, this number 135 was one story with both of them.
Bringing them together in this
Correct.
One issue.
Oh, correct. Wow. And so, yeah, but that this issue is, like, if you've been a Batman fan for a long time,
I've read some things.
Well,
and heard some things.
Yeah, I suggest if you haven't read it, listen to me, casuals. Read it. It's awesome. But as per usual, besides that, Daredevil, I'm still reading as always. I always will. They released a really cool cover that was Daredevil, but in the Spider-Man costume. Like his costume done up like Spider-Man.
Neat.
It's a really cool cover, and I got it like to give to my son someday because he's obsessed with Spider-Man and Daredevil's my favorite superhero, so they're kind of like in one, you know, situation. So I was like, oh, I want to get this and I'll share it with him someday. And then
read it.
That's a good idea.
Hang it on as well.
That's a good idea. That's definitely a good idea. I decided with the new child, I'm actually gonna grade a comic and hang it up in the child's room.
Have you decided which comic?
It will depend on the name, which has to do a lot with the gender. So we find out soon.
Awesome. Can't wait for that update.
It's going to be a good one. But anyway, so what else am I reading? Oh, yes. Darth Vader is out again, and it's quite the storyline. And then I'm reading the two Iron Man books. I Am Iron Man. I Am Iron Man is an anthology, so the stories are not connected at all.
Oh, that's great.
Each book, but it's through his eras. So you've got
that's even cooler.
A brand new story in like old school Iron Man, like with the really clunky old suit from like when he first came out.
The Mark One thing.
Yeah, but it's done in that animation style too.
Nice.
And each comic is a different era of Iron Man getting futuristic. One of them, he's going to be like a Shogun warrior, like in Iron Man armor kind of situation. Looks pretty cool. But yeah, that's what I Am Iron Man is. And then there's Invincible Iron Man, which is one ongoing story, like any other normal comic. But it picks up where the last run left off, which is he... pretty much made himself broke, using money to buy every single weapon of mass destruction in the entire world and possibly galaxy.
Oof.
And he stored them all under one roof, and he said that that's the best thing he could do with his money. And he did it into poverty, where now the only thing he has is not even a place to live. All he has is his armor. And he can't upgrade it, and whatever's missing is missing.
Just gonna live in his armor. What a bum.
I mean, he's crashing in different places, and someone's trying to kill him, and he's kind of like a renegade on the run, but also trying to be heroic. He's Iron Man, but it's really, really interesting. It's a very, very interesting run, and I actually really like it so far.
Deconstructed hero type thing.
Yeah, it's like not rich Tony Stark, like it's poor Tony Stark with a janky Iron Man suit that's pretty much all he's got left.
Awesome. I always wonder why people didn't like Iron Man 3.
Yeah, Iron Man 3 was, I don't know. It's Do we do an Iron Man episode yet?
Not yet. We're
Oh
gonna
man.
get there. We'll have to decide.
Oh yeah.
Season four. We'll see.
That's gonna be a long talk. But anyway, yeah, so Chris, do we get into the news here?
Let's talk some news. There's some stuff going on in the comic zeitgeist world. So let's talk
Sweet.
about Jim Lee, who has been huge, huge part of Comic Con for so long. And then he moved over completely to DC in like administration role. And like now he's being totally promoted to basically the top of the company. I mean, he's going to be president of DC,
Wow.
which is great. I mean, he's been part of the leadership for, I don't know, since I think he came in the New 52 in that era, as part of that. And then he's just, that's over, that's like a decade or so now. So he's been moving up and things have gotten better and better. So thanks, Jim Lee.
That's awesome. That's great.
Yeah, I mean, he's such a staple when you think about like when we were kids in comics, like the classic X-Men number one, that the most highly sold comic of all time. His work at Image, he's such a mainstay of comics and responsible for shaping them, in such a way. So this is great to see him on, in charge of a company that has so much potential and has been really moving up in the world of, more and more popularity with the general audience.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a smart move. Plus, you have someone that obviously knows this industry from the literally from the bottom of it to the top. He knows all of it. So, you're not hiring some tyrant that doesn't actually understand the art that goes behind these things. There's a lot of art, and he would naturally be someone that would respect that. So.
100%. And then moving on with DC news, we have the Superman Legacy movie, which James Gunn is going to write and direct, which is part of the new DCU Chapter One Gods and Monsters. We have confirmation that Crypto will be in Superman Legacy. So Crypto, the super dog, he wants to make a Superman movie. So make a Superman movie. And this is how you do it, because there's a lot of stuff in there that is just needs to happen that has not happened. And if you want to take it to like the comic side of things, that's it. I mean, Crypto is also probably going to show up, will show up in Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow if they get to that movie as well. So I know he's in that. And I saw a really funny thing on Facebook today where it was a couple panels from a comic where Superman was talking to Crypto because Crypto had stolen his cape. He's basically bad dog to him, like, you can't take my cape. And they're like, I really hope this part's in the movie.
That's great. That's great. I really like I am not I mean, you know this, I'm not a Superman fan. I don't really read Superman. I feel like I can't vibe with the character, and that's a me problem. That's not a Superman problem, and I know this about myself. But I mean, the first time I really, really loved Superman was Henry Cavill's Superman. And maybe that just makes me naive, and I'm okay with that. I accept that.
Makes you a damn casual.
When it comes to Superman,
it's fine, exactly.
And I want him to give me that again. I want that again because I want to love Superman. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do. And you were never a Christopher Reeves fan?
I mean, I think the movies just look so dated to me by the time I was old enough.
Yeah.
Like Batman, original Tim Burton's Batman is like on that line for me of like dated looking. Whereas the Superman movies, to me, they just look very dated.
I agree. I mean, they're 70s movies.
Exactly.
So, and it's like, it's funny because like, I mean, we're 6 years apart.
Yeah.
And I don't like, sometimes that makes a huge difference in pop culture and like what you watched as a kid. I mean, I'm sure you watched those Superman movies as a kid, but it's a different thing when it's so much farther into closer to the 90s when you're having these different movies coming out and representing what things look like. And cinema's changed thanks to Star Wars and whatnot, you know, dramatically by that point.
Sure.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm just really curious about this movie. And you know, James Gunn, I got to see Guardians 3, but everybody loves Guardians 3. So I'm really pumped because he is like such a good storyteller. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the statement about like Guardians is like, it's a James Gunn movie first and then it's an MCU movie because he was allowed to do what he wanted.
Wow.
He put these weird characters into the mainstream, you know.
Yeah.
They'd gotten popular in comics, but it's still in comics. It was different. All of a sudden you launch a movie about this and everybody loves it. It's like, look what you just did. And then, you know, there's too many haters out there.
To me, that's James Gunn's resume. And what I mean by that is I'm more knowledgeable than the average bear regarding comic books, right? Sure. I'm no crazy professional. I just know more than the average person, we'll say, right? And I still had never heard of the Guardians of the Galaxy until the movie came out.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I've read comic books, you know, before then. So to me, he took this obscure group of characters and made them household names.
Exactly.
And that's his resume. To me, that's all you need. He took the source material, which was already obscure, and gave it a heart and a soul, which is what he did. And I can't speak highly enough for James Gunn. And I can't wait to see what he does with the DCU.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really glad he's in charge of it. So
same.
Mentioned the dawn of the DCU earlier. It's the initiative going on in the DC books right now. So we just had Stargirl, The Last Children, which is, you know, basically a JSA story with Stargirl.
Yeah.
And also, you know, Geoff Johns is doing the Justice Society, I believe, as well right now. So they're really pushing these characters, these classic Golden Age characters. So spinning out of that Stargirl comic will be three titles, which will be miniseries featuring Alan. One is featuring Alan Scott, who has not had his own standalone in forever.
Wow.
It's like I forgot how many years it was, but it's a long time. So it's interesting to see this happening. We're getting, so it's called Alan Scott, the Green Lantern, by Tim Sheridan and Cyan Torme. And then we're getting Jay Garrick, the Flash,
nice,
by Jeremy Adams and Diego Olortugia. I guess that's how you say it. And then the Sandman, which is not the Sandman that most people will think of when you say it, not from the Neil Gaiman, but the JSA Sandman, AKA Wesley Dodds. We'll be getting it from one of my favorite writers, Rob Venditti, and art by Riley Rossmo. These will all debut in October.
Right on.
So I'm excited for that. And I know you're probably unsure of what I even said,
no,
but you should watch Stargirl with your daughter.
Yes, you've brought that up many times. And yes, I do. We just, so they dropped a random half a season for Moon Girl.
Awesome.
Well, I don't know where that came from. I thought it was just going to be like Yeah, I thought it was just gonna be 8 episodes, and now it's a total of 16.
That's
And
awesome.
yeah, so like she was like, "Dad, can we just like power through these?" I'm like, "Absolutely, we can." And we did, and they were good. They were really good.
Maybe I have to watch this. My wife loves animation, so loves that kind of stuff.
It's good. It's very good. But anyway, sorry, we digress.
No,
what's next?
Don't ever apologize for tangenting. That's what this is about. We have DC Night Terrors, which really piqued my interest.
Yes.
You're a horror fan. And there was a free comic book day issue out that is kind of starting this massive crossover. Now, they said no crossovers, but they didn't mean basic Elseworlds crossovers, which is fine with me. Because here you're telling this like very long story of where you can do whatever you want, basically. And so I believe it's a couple months long, actually. And it just launched with the free comic book day special, like I said. And then it'll be going for, I think it starts this summer. I forgot. I think it's July. It's either June or July.
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely picking up the Batman one. I'm definitely picking up the Nightwing one. You got a father and son, you got to follow them both. You know, to me, if you're reading Batman, you have to be reading Nightwing. There is so much about their relationship that affects both of those characters so wildly in completely different titles.
Absolutely.
And then what were the other, so there was Batman, there's Nightwing, there's a whole bunch. There's a ton.
There's a crap load. I mean, it's like, it's intense. To the point where I'm like, this is why I have the app, because I want to read stuff like this, but I'm not going to buy it all, you know? And so being able to read it still and get it is awesome. So Jay Lee is doing art on it. And I actually did buy an issue because this is where I'm going to use I'm going to get these cool variants or whatever, instead of buying just standard comics. This is an opportunity to do that because there's some really cool artwork being done. I think I pre-ordered the one where it's Batman and like Dead Man is like morphing out of him. It's like really awesome cover. So I decided to go with that.
They're all up finally. I'm looking at them right now.
Yeah, they're all up and it's a crap ton, as I said. Metric crap ton.
Dude, there's so many.
And then last up in DC news, McFarlane dropped a exclusive figure today. Superman in his Unchained armor. Unchained was a Scott Snyder miniseries that I forgot when it was, maybe 10 years ago or so, maybe now 10, 8 years. Awesome stuff. I believe Jim Lee did the art on this book. And so this gold edition, it's a special paint job. It's like patina, which is like, I forgot what the definition is. It's like, where it's a little faded and like vintage looking, like statues are sometimes, or like metal gets. So it's really cool, like super unstandard Superman figure. Comes in a collector box. It's one of 10,000 pieces when you get it. So I love that they're doing these limited ones. They just did one with Big Bad Toy Store, which was like this. They're doing this black and white line with them.
So awesome.
Exclusively, and so the Flash came out and it's like gray and yellow and white, so it's like it's a really neat, like more cartoony look, and it was like 2,000-3,000 pieces or something like that. So as they do more of this stuff, I get really more intrigued, because I would love to collect more of this stuff than just the standard figures, even though I love them.
Sure.
I have to also be like, I can't just buy all these because they're like,
oh my god, awesome.
You know, it's tough.
I would love to just be like, yeah, I want all of them.
Yeah, I just won the lottery.
Right? Yeah, it's crazy, some of these figures, but I've slowed down on my figure buying. Ugh.
Yeah, I've upped my selling, lower my buying. So,
yeah.
Unless it's this kind of shit. So,
yeah.
Star Wars comics. New crossover coming from Charles Soule. Star Wars Dark Droids. Mm-hmm. So this was announced at Celebration, and this will be launching in August. This will be, you know, it'll be going across the books that are out, and also having its own, you know, mini series as usual. What does it say? The event will also spin off into a new series and tie into the four ongoing series, like I just said. Or who or what is a scourge, and why is no droid safe? As a corruption spreads from one droid to the next, the Rebel Alliance and the Empire both face chaos.
That sounds cool.
Sounds good.
I'm into that.
Yeah, it's a little bit different, right? It's a different threat. How are you going to deal with this? Droids are a huge part of Star Wars.
Yeah.
People have been complaining that they're not using droids correctly. Well, you're not reading the comics because you don't know about Aphra's droids, and you're lost.
My God, seeing those droids in live action would be terrifying, I think.
It's going to happen, I'm sure.
Ugh, man.
I'm sure, and I can't wait. Some tough news. So we got the writer's strike going on right now. So it's messing up our... I mean, good for them.
This is sad news,
though. Let me start with that. But we also have been seeing all the memes of, like, what happens to good shows when a writer's strike happens and all of a sudden it changes, which I... It's really funny because I really remember watching the first season of Heroes, and this is the biggest one I've seen on the socials as of late, is remember when the writer strikes happened and then Heroes came back with season two and it was a completely shitty show.
Yeah.
And it was just nothing that was pale in comparison to what they did. And you're just kind of sitting there like, shit, which now really worries me about a lot of the stuff that's great now on TV that could suffer from this, including Daredevil Reborn.
Yeah, I'm really not happy about that. But the thing is this whole season is already written. They're in, they're shooting. But with the writer's strike, there's just people in that union that won't cross the picket. So because they won't cross the picket, they can't continue shooting, and they've had to halt the shooting. Yep. I said this today on the socials, and I'm going to say it, and that's all I have to say about that. I don't understand the writer's strike because, in my opinion, over the last 3 years, give or take, we have seen some of the best writing in television and movies over the past 3 years, in my opinion. Now, this whole AI thing is being discussed. If you think an AI can copy what we have seen in shows like Severance and Ted Lasso, and I mean, Shrinking, I could just name a few. If you think an AI can duplicate that, you're crazy, because you don't know anything about writing, because writing needs the human experience. Writing needs the human condition. If you are a writer, you need to have experienced the human condition to write anything worth anything. An AI cannot do that. Pay them. That's it. Pay them.
You deserve a reward for that speech.
I don't know if you're being sarcastic.
I'm not. I have a big problem with AI. It's very scary. I've watched enough Terminator to understand what's going to happen eventually. But to your point, artists are worried, writers are worried. Yeah, it can do stuff. But like you said, it can't replicate the human element.
No.
It can exterminate it, but it can't replicate it. Also, Blade. This is a mess. I don't know what's going to happen in this movie. I feel like, and also I did put on here that Midnight Suns is rumored for Phase 6. So what are we looking at here? That. What are they trying to, like, this is what they need to set up. They're totally revamping what they were going with in the first time around. Mm-hmm. When does Mahershala Ali get tired of waiting? I know he's really heavily involved and wants to make it happen, but now here, another obstacle.
Yeah, and he's already appeared in the MCU as Blade in the post credits of Eternals, and it's only his voice, but it is Mahershala Ali doing his voice. But still, I mean, he's there. So we know Blade is there. The fans want it. I think that's what's going to keep it alive, purely. But the thing is now they've announced Midnight Suns in phase six.
Not announced. It's rumored.
It's been talked. Yeah. I heard another rumor that Agatha, the Agatha show that's coming out, will be a backdoor pilot two Midnight Suns.
Yes.
Which would be awesome, which makes sense. Comic-wise, it would make sense. Absolutely possible. And it would be a great way to introduce Blade before the Blade movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if they can divert this away from the main MCU and kind of build this other universe for a little while, instead of saying everything has to be like connected and whatnot, like that's what we really wanted at first. But now the world's become big enough and you've told this 10-year story and you're really trying to do it again in the wrong ways, in some sorts. I would love to see kind of like, yeah, all of this stuff has happened. This stuff is happening out, but we need to look at this darker side of the, you know, the MCU and treat these characters the right way. Like, where's Ghost Rider? Like, Blade can't be fighting next to like Kamala Khan. You know, he can be, yes, but at this point, I want them to go do X-Men and then go do your Midnight Suns and stuff like that on the other side of it, and just do more standalone stuff, and then do Secret Wars, which is a huge event, which would cross over everything. So that's what I hope for.
Same.
And Ghost Rider.
Yeah, I would love Ghost Rider. I would love to see Ghost Rider on the big screen. Again.
Again. For the third time. Fantastic Four is nearing a casting announcement, I'm pretty sure. There's been so many rumors out there.
So many. You know, our buddy Kylo Ren now is the front runner for Reed Richards.
Quote-unquote final talks, actually.
Yep, and then same quote-unquote talks with Margot Robbie for The Invisible Woman.
I don't believe that at all.
Really?
I could be surprised, but I just don't know if I see it happening.
She is, to me, she's quite a chameleon when it comes to acting. She has an incredible range, and like, first off, her Harley Quinn, I love her Harley Quinn. Just in reading the character and then seeing her bring Harley to life, fantastic. And then just seeing her in A Wolf of Wall Street was just such a great movie. She was amazing in that. What has she not done that has been great?
No, I love Margot Robbie and everything I've seen.
Exactly. So I would see Sue Storm. I could see it. The question would be, who's her brother? Who's your brother going to be?
Of course you can see it, but it's just like, we're just going to throw big stars into every role now instead of having unknowns. What I like about the front runner, quote unquote, for Human Torch is I don't even know who that guy is. I've seen, like, I've been sent pictures of him and things like that, but I don't know who he is. And that's fine, because that's how kind of like Chris Evans was as well. And Tom Holland's a good example. I don't know how Tom Holland was. Now he's Spider-Man. So don't give me, what's her name is Clea, which I'm fine with, you know, at the end of Doctor Strange 2. I'm forgetting what her name is, but
Charlize Theron, right?
Thank you, Furiosa. Yeah. And it's just like, oh, hey, I want to be in a Marvel movie, but it just kind of takes it away for me. Whatever you want to do, there's big name stars in other roles that have done a great job, but the Fantastic Four, I think, like Adam Driver, fine. Okay, he's a great actor, so and I could see it, but then it's like, to your point, I could also see Margot Robbie, but I just want kind of to disappear into the movie where I can believe that they're truly these characters,
and I think that there's even more responsibility of that, and I think too that there is a chase for what they had with Robert Downey. And I think that was lightning in a bottle. I think that Robert Downey Jr. in Iron Man is a once in a lifetime thing that we may never see again. You know, maybe Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool.
That's a good one. Yeah.
You know, I'll give you that one. But Robert Downey is Tony Stark. His story is Tony Stark's story. His story is Iron Man's story. He lived Iron Man's real story. Had a life, an awful life of drugs and alcohol abuse to turn it around and be a philanthropist. which Robert Downey is, you know, as well as an actor. But again, so is Tony Stark, so is Iron Man. So again, sometimes I feel like they're looking for that lightning in a bottle again, but I just don't know if they're ever going to achieve it.
I don't think so. What was the rumor about? Who was that actress from that 70s show? That,
oh, Mila Kunis.
Mila Kunis. Unless it's Mila Kunis as the Thing.
Oh, God.
Did you see that one?
Yeah, She Thing.
I mean, listen, you want to swap genders and whatnot. If you tell us a good story, fine, whatever. But I was just kind of like taken back by that. And no, it's been debunked, but I was just like, oh, what a way to drive the internet crazy.
I know, but like, it's just, to me, the source material is, it was Ben Grimm. And you know what? To me, it made Sue Storm that much more special. She was the only woman in the Fantastic Four. And I think that that made her special, you know, in my mind, at least. You add another woman to it. I mean, they all could be women, whatever, but she was special.
She's also one of the most powerful characters in the Marvel Universe, period.
Exactly.
She's extreme. Like, people, like, when she's written in the 60s, like a damsel in distress or a wife and stuff like that, as she's evolved, she is one of the most important characters and strongest characters.
Well,
there is, which is awesome.
But I love the way that the women are written in comics. Yeah. You know, you've got her, look at the Phoenix, Dark Phoenix, again, another extremely powerful female character. Terrifying. Scarlet Witch, same thing. I mean, you know, Omega level.
The most powerful character.
Yes, exactly.
In the Marvel Universe.
Yes. So women, I guess, are always special in comics. I mean, but anyway, I'm looking forward to Fantastic Four, the first family of Marvel. This needs to be handled with tender, loving care.
Absolutely. That's another episode we have to do. So,
absolutely.
All right. What do you think, man? Let's jump to a commercial.
Yeah.
We're going to come back.
Yeah.
Light up our cigarettes. We don't smoke cigarettes, but we'll light up one in honor of John Constantine.
We have to smoke the entire rest of the episode nonstop.
Agreed.
Like John would want.
Right. Exactly. We have to live the part. So
exactly.
We'll be back.
We're talking about Constantine.
DFAT Comics is the publishing branch of DontForgetATowel.com, the only place to travel geekly. Focusing on creator-owned and independent titles like Hollowed, Pursuit of Plastic, and Fairy, and many more. DFAT Comics will be a mix of genres appealing to every kind of reader. Join the new source of comic book entertainment with DFAT Comics.
Welcome back, casuals. We are talking John Constantine on this episode. This is Chris.
And this is Rocco.
And so let's talk a little bit about how we first got into this character. Mm-hmm. John Constantine is definitely not a household name for your comic book heroes, and definitely not a hero. And well, I won't say that, because John Constantine has a good heart and a good compass. But he does kind of walk that line of darkness, and his cynicism, his bad attitude, his chain smoking. he's a really cool character, and we're going to get a little bit into his origins. But I want to know, where did you first bump into John Constantine?
I will tell you, but first, I purchased a beer today that I purposely purchased for this show, and it's because it's called Dirty Bastard. And the reason I picked that is because John Constantine is known as the Bastard by a whole lot of superheroes that outright call him that. So I figure, in the name of John Constantine, I got the Bastard beer. But anyway, my first foray into John Constantine would have to be the movie with Keanu Reeves. And at the time, I read comics, but it was very sparingly. It was very, like, not collector status, just, like, not really following a lot of storylines, just, oh, here's a comic I saw at the grocery store, I want to read this, that kind of thing.
2005.
Yeah, exactly. Like, right, I was a freshman in college. And to me, when I saw trailers, it just looked like a horror movie about possession. And I had no understanding that it was a DC comic. I saw the movie. I loved the movie. I found out it was a DC comic. I'm drawn to that, like, Exorcist stuff. And I started to seek out John Constantine. And that's when I was gravely disappointed, because I ended up falling in love with the comic book version. And it really made me mad about the Keanu version.
It does, in a way. I really think that if that character had a English accent, that's about it. I also learned about John Constantine through the movie. We're both pretty much casuals about this character, admittedly. And that's why I want to do these kind of characters well on the show, because, you know, as we develop our knowledge of comics and we read more and more through the years, you know, that grows. And this is about, yes, the time I really got back into reading comics was 2005, 2006, like heavily back in the comics. Comic movies were really starting to come out, you know, after the late 90s into the 2000s, so much emphasis on comic book fandom. And then, you know, this is the big turning point in my collecting, where I just was picking up books. So I didn't really mind that movie. I didn't really understand what it was supposed to be, like you said, but looking back at it now and still being able to watch it and really enjoy it, it's fine for me. I don't mind some Elseworld things. I think that if you could swap in a couple things and make it a true Constantine movie, but it works for me. And I was actually really excited when they announced that sequel.
I really loved the movie. I just don't know why it needs to be called Constantine. That's my thing. Like, it's a cool exorcism movie. It was fun. I liked seeing a young Shia LaBeouf. I love Keanu and anything he's in.
Yeah.
And it was just a great movie altogether. But besides the chain smoking, like you said, we didn't even get an English accent. You know, yeah. And to me, like, I want to understand the choices in that.
Sure. I mean, that's Hollywood for you. It's adapting it to what they wanted to be, what they thought would work. I mean, they were changing a ton of things in comic book movies, right? So, I mean, like you said, Shia LaBeouf, his role is Chaz. Chaz is a character from the comics.
Yep.
These stories like this are kind of interesting, though, because this is something that Constantine would do. He would go in and he would have to, this is a perfect, like, mini series, basically, that you would see, which I wanted to mention because we'll get into, you know, his comic runs and all that stuff. But so much of his comic book history are a lot of small runs, mini series and whatnot. So,
yeah,
we'll see what they do with this new one. I hope they, you know, I hope they stick to what they did in the first movie, so it's not weird, but they can also do some neat stuff, since, you know, nearly 20 years has passed since that movie came out.
Yeah.
And it can exist in the Elseworld side of the DCU, that they're building. So
it can, I feel like if there's no version in the DCU, there is some, like, missing. You know what I mean? I guess we're going to talk about the comics, but I do love his interactions with Batman. I think that they're great. I think not seeing them on screen would be a travesty.
And we've definitely had the chance to see them on the animated side of things. So we'll talk about that as well.
Yes.
Because there is a lot of that too, including Matt Ryan's role. So let's talk about the origin. Nowadays, with Justice League Dark and whatnot, you see Swamp Thing as a part of, you know, John Constantine's life. Definitely one of his main allies when it comes to telling stories. But his first appearance was in Swamp Thing. And so we got it in Swamp Thing number 37 in 1985, created by Alan Moore, Steve Bissett, and John Tattleben.
It's so. First of all, I did not know this was an Alan Moore creation. No? I did not know that Alan Moore created John Constantine, and that made me smile today because I was reading some of the stuff he sent me, and when I saw that, I was like, "Oh wow, okay." Because I mean, one of my favorite comics of all time being Alan Moore's. Wow, my brain just said Killing Watchmen. Joke.
Oh, Killing Joke.
Yeah, the Killing Joke. You know, knowing that he created John Constantine was like, okay, so this guy's speaking my language.
Yeah, no, I know. That's I guess the fun thing about this is that they wanted to have this supernatural advisor for Swamp Thing, and they weren't really sure this was ever gonna be a character that carried on. One of the cool facts about the creation of the character was that they based it on Sting.
They're big
Police fans. I'm a big The Police fan, and big Sting fan. And I think that I definitely see it. I think it's a really neat parallel. And it's funny how they were always kind of worried they were going to get sued. So
that's fantastic. And I didn't know that, but now it makes so much more sense. Just based on Constantine's look in the comics and like even down to, you know, a bit of the accent, sort of. I would say Constantine's more Cockney, you know, a little bit more slang, but he can choose to be refined when he wants to be. But yeah, and another thing about this too is I love that he and Swamp Thing are very tied as characters. Because you're looking at, you know, a giant slime creature and a guy dressed in a trench coat chain smoking cigarettes. So there's such a, to me, that in itself lends to a weird type of comedy that I think only some people can really grasp, like how funny that in itself is.
Yeah. That is a really neat dichotomy when you think about it. Yeah. I like it when they're drawn next to each other because of the size of Swamp Thing and just looking down at Constantine, him looking up and making a remark or whatever.
Yeah, and like, yeah, we're gonna talk more about their relationship, but anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's move on to Constantine's main run. Is ongoing now. So the thing about the comics, then this came out in Vertigo Comics, was a side shoot of DC Comics, yeah. Kind of like how Black Label is today. Mm-hmm. Vertigo disappeared maybe 2018. I forgot when the last Vertigo comic was, and they closed the company, mm-hmm. which was kind of sad.
Yeah.
Honestly, and then to go back and just do Black Label, I don't know, whatever they want to do. But so it ran. Hellblazer ran for 300 issues. It is the longest running title, Vertigo comics title.
Wow.
Yes. That's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot.
And so it started in 1988. It ran until 2013, I think, that's was when the 300th crazy. Episode came out. Or episode issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And I mean, there's a lot of people who wrote the title, did art on it, but I'll name a couple of the writers. We have Garth Ennis, Warren Ellis, Grant Morrison, Neil Gaiman, Brian Azzarello, Andy Diggle, Peter Milligan.
Jesus.
Yeah, so many like heavy big hitters. Writers. Yeah, exactly. And so to run for that long, I mean, we're not going to talk about everything that happened. But that is super impressive, mm-hmm. especially for just such a niche book.
Yes.
For horror, supernatural title. It's great to see something like that. And the character stayed around for so long. And like I mentioned before, there was a lot of miniseries going on as well. It's telling different stories within the Constantine world.
Absolutely. Here I got actually right here. I love this cover. This is the Hellblazer number 24.
Oh, nice.
He's holding a pint and got a cigarette in his hand.
And, which when is that from the Sandman series one?
I believe so, yes.
Awesome.
No, this is the Hellblazer.
Mm-hmm. Constantine, so, the Hellblazer.
Yep, that's it.
Yes, or no, the the Hellblazer. We'll talk about it in a little bit.
Okay.
Because that's right. A little, that's down the road.
Gotcha. Yeah. I see it. And then
because this is the interesting thing about the transition when the 300th episode, the 300th issue dropped in 2013 when they announced that the series was going to end. But yeah, 2011, when the new 52 launched, Justice League Dark, and their whole new initiative, different storytelling, new origins and everything like that. Yeah, they brought in a younger version of Constantine, which basically split, you know, it was definitely not the same character. Yes, it is Constantine, but this is, they're going back and starting a new story with him. They can do this basically like Prime Earth storyline. It was kind of an interesting take because you do have Hellblazer still ongoing for two more years. And I remember this. I think I bought the last whatever issues of Hellblazer because I was really heavily collecting comics at that point. Yeah. And I had issue one, but I've never really gotten into it. I want to, and that's something I'm going to tackle on the app one day. But Justice League Dark 2011 brought in basically a rebooted John Constantine that would carry forward to where we are now through the rebirth and into the Sandman era.
Yeah, that's all. That's something I would love to get in trades. Just start in 1988 and just read to 2013, 300 issues. That's incredible. There's got to be an omnibus, I would assume.
I wish you didn't get headaches reading off a tablet or something. Because
yeah, I know
the app
is
just so, it's so much more affordable. I want to get on that soapbox, but if you want to immerse yourself and you really want to get into these things, it would cost you so much money. Not that I'm telling you how to spend your money, but I love the app. I can go back and read comics from the old golden age and things like that. But this is a commercial for the DC Infinite app.
Yes. And they're a sponsor, obviously. Duh.
So we're going to get into the current status where you're more familiar, but there were three more series. Constantine 2013, which is this continuation of the younger character. Constantine the Hellblazer in 2015. So we see these reboots continue to happen a little bit here and there, new stories, not reboots, but new starting points. And yeah, then in 2016, when the rebirth era started, we got the Hellblazer rebirth. And that's where we kind of launch into where we are today.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I got to go back. That's a character that I need to go back and study up on him. Like you said, I've read all of the new stuff, but I haven't read pretty much any of the old stuff.
Yeah. I might go read that Swamp Thing issue tonight. I've never read that. I'd love to read his origin story.
So which one? What are you talking about?
Like I said, I got the app. I can go read Swamp Thing 37. That's what I love about it. It's just like, I would find a facsimile or I would never touch the original. It's so much
fun. Yeah, you'll have like an 11th printing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Some 12th grader or, I'm sorry, 12-year-old drew it or something.
Exactly.
You know, so. Let's jump into the current status. The Sandman universe, you know, based on the Neil Gaiman, the Sandman, they did this whole initiative of just telling new stories, having this umbrella of these different characters and their series. So Constantine was always a big part of that. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that in a little bit as well when we get into the media. But there was a one-shot in 2019 called The Sandman Universe Presents Hellblazer. And then after that, it became John Constantine Hellblazer in 2019, which ran for 12 issues, set in the Sandman universe.
That's where I started.
That's probably what you have, right? That issue. What is it?
So I have the first six in trade, and I have first prints for the next six.
Awesome.
And I really, really enjoyed it. It was, I mean, there was everything from a mermaid to using a child as bait against a demon,
why not?
Which was which was messed up, but like, and all's well that ends well kind of way for John, which is usually always typically him. Blood cults, I mean, you name it, it happened. It had a great ending. It was altogether definitely part of the Sandman universe. I mean, you felt it. You felt that reading it. But very, very, very John Constantine. Some of the most cynical uses of magic. It was great. I suggest it for anyone.
Awesome. Do you have to be reading really the whole Sandman universe storyline? It's not heavily connected. That was my concern.
No,
because I wanted to read it, but I've never even read Sandman. So it's like I wanted to start at the beginning, then read that stuff. But if it's just John Constantine stories, I'm in. So
yeah, it is, and it's a 12 issue long story.
Cool.
And it's definitely worth and absolutely worth a read.
Listen up, casuals. Let's talk Black Label then.
Yes.
Two big Black Label titles. You put this on when I totally forgot about this because I haven't even had a chance to read it yet. I want to, but let's talk about the first one, Hellblazer Rise and Fall by one of our favorite writers, you and I, Tom Taylor.
Yes.
This is 2020.
Tom Taylor does it again. Have you read this one?
I have not, man. I have a couple stacks of Black Labels.
There you go. Well, this is the big, like the big square
yes.
books almost.
I don't even know what to do with them. They're just, I don't even know what to do with them.
So, I put them in my bookshelf, like with the rest of my stuff. And this was a really fun, I love the artwork in Rise and Fall. And I love the story. Billionaires are committing suicide randomly all over the world, and what is happening. And, you know, obviously John Constantine begins investigating, and, you know, it's fun. It's silly. He may have had sex with the devil. It was really good. It was really funny. It was really Constantine. It was a fun read. Like, the Sandman universe Hellblazer that we were just talking about, those 12 issues, it wasn't really funny. That was more the serious side of things.
Okay.
Whereas Rise and Fall was actually funny as it was, like, really just great all around.
I think that's important too, right?
Yes.
Because you can do both. The side, like, horror is allowed to do both. And I think that's one of the best things about horror. Is when I can laugh at it too, and you can do fun stuff with it. And horror doesn't have to be slasher and people getting stabbed and all that stuff. But the dark side of things, the macabre, can be super dark or fun, like in a dark way.
Yeah, exactly, and I think like Rise and Fall was a great mixture of the comedy and the horror side.
Awesome. I want to read it. Fun fact, the artist, who I'm drawing a blank, as usual, is the same one from The Boys.
I could see that.
Which is awesome. I love that artwork, and I really feel stupid that I don't know his name, but have you watched The Boys yet?
Yeah, I watched the first season.
Did you? Did you like it?
It's good. I don't know. I didn't get obsessed with it like a lot of other people did. I guess it didn't catch me the same way. Then.
Yeah.
You
need to watch the second season. Derek Robertson. Sorry. That's your name. I'm sorry I forgot it. Go on.
That's all right. No, that was great. That was a great Hellblazer, Rise and Fall. Highly suggested.
Awesome. What about Swamp Thing Green Hell? You've raved about it on this show prior episodes.
Yes, and I'll tell you why. It is a post-apocalyptic book where the elements, so the green, and then I what's the disease? The
red?
The red is the animals.
Oh, yeah.
I never remember what that one is. Like, so anyway, the green is attacking humans, and there's not many humans left. It's like the Earth is revolting against humans, and they're in the small, almost tribes, like very small. So this kind of follows one group of people, and their little island village gets attacked by these, what were you
the saying? Rot. Sorry.
The rots. There you go. The rot and the green are working together. So the green kills, and then the rot takes the bodies. So it's kind of like that's their bargain. They struck a bargain to pretty much rid the Earth of humans, and the protector, the green protector, is gone. Swamp Thing is gone.
Which one is it? Alec Holland?
Alec Holland, yes.
Okay.
So they want to talk to the, you know, after this attack, they want to talk to the man at the lighthouse. And they're, oh, the man of the lighthouse. And then, you know, we all know who the man of the lighthouse ends up being. You got to be stupid not to know. If you've been following these characters, it's Constantine, obviously. And they're like, what can we do? And Constantine knows the only way to save the Earth is to bring back Alec Holland. And awesome. There it is. And there it is. Written by Jeff Lemire. This was a great book all around, artwork, story, ending, all of it. It was worth the wait. It had a really weird release period. Very weird.
It did, but I never doubted he would finish it. I was kind of pissed because I was like, oh, this is something I've wanted to read. And when they took so much time between the first and second issue, it's just, this isn't happening. This isn't happening.
I had to read them again, and I'm glad I did because it was so long.
Right, that's kind of the tough thing sometimes, and I used to let comics build up, especially like miniseries, because it's sometimes just easy to read it as one big story and not have to wait and not forget what happens. Details.
Exactly.
The devil is in the details.
Exactly. So I highly suggest if you're a Constantine fan, you should definitely be reading Green Hell. And I believe it's the second book has a cover where it's Constantine smoking a cigarette, and in the cloud of smoke around him is Swamp Thing's like eyes.
I love. Yes, that is. That's. I remember that now.
Yeah, I own that cover. I purposely. Yep. That's the one I ordered. I was like, that's the one. And my dude at the comic shop was like, I'm not even gonna check. I know this is the one you wanted, and I was like, yep, that is the one I wanted.
You know me so well.
Yep. And that worked out well. But yeah, again, excellent. Excellent. And I love it continues. Again, that's where I got the bastard from, because that's what Swamp Thing addressed Constantine as, the bastard. It's the bastard. Like, I love that because they hate him. I think that's such a charm to his character. Like, they all really hate him, even his closest friends.
I mean, it's the best kind of friend. So.
Yeah.
We'll have to rename the episode The Bastard.
Right.
So let's talk media. We did mention the movie already, but let's go a little more into it, because I do want to mention how it did have a lot of famous faces in it, which at that time weren't super famous, but now when you look back at it, it does have quite the cast. We mentioned, of course, Shia LaBeouf, as I call him, Shia LaBeouf, whatever you want to say,
LaBeouf.
But Rachel Weisz, I love Rachel Weisz. She's beautiful. She was gorgeous back then. She's even more gorgeous now.
That's right.
I was in love with her as an actress since The Mummy. So I really liked the character she played in this, with her, also the twin sister role. The story is good. That's what I really enjoyed about this movie, and why I can excuse it and say, yeah, it's an early 2000 comic book movie.
Yeah.
It had good elements, but I get you. I hear you.
No, and that's the thing. And real quick aside on Rachel Weisz, her husband, Daniel Craig.
Yes.
Did you, being a fan of Star Wars, did you hear their little Star Wars story about their children?
I did not. I may have, but I need you to remind me.
So the daughter, their daughter is just like older than a toddler, maybe toddlerish age. I don't remember exactly, to reread the article. However, the daughter is so obsessed with Star Wars that she wants to watch it on repeat, that they have come to tell her that Star Wars is broken.
Yes.
And that because Star Wars is broken, she can't watch it for a little while just so they can get a break from Star Wars. Daniel Craig was in Star Wars as a stormtrooper.
Yep.
And I love that. I love that so much. But anyway. Yeah,
that's a great story. That's a great tactic as well. So parents out there, take note.
I do that to my son. I lie to my son constantly. He's
three. White
he's,
lies. White lies.
He doesn't know better. No.
You do.
No, Paw Patrol is broken.
That's right.
Anyway, so the Keanu movie was a great movie. I really, really liked that movie. And Peter Stormare's rendition of Satan at the end.
Love that guy. Love that actor.
Oh my God, we need more of him as Satan. I almost went to church after that. After that performance, I almost went to church. Like, that's how good of a devil, a good of like Satan, you know, Lucifer, that he played so well. And it was, what, 5 minutes, not even, at the end, for some of the best dialogue in the whole movie.
So take note that, you know, that show Lucifer.
Yes.
That's a rendition of the DC character who is also part of this universe, which
would
have been really neat if Peter Stormare would have been able to carry his own story in that regard. That would have been pretty neat. But I always kind of look at it like that, if, you know, as a comic fan, manipulating in my mind that that's what could have been.
Yeah, exactly. And then we have Lucifer in The Sandman, played by Gwendolyn Phasma. Gwendolyn Christie?
Yes. Yeah. That is her name. Gwendolyn
Phasma.
What's her name in Game of Thrones? Brienne of Tarth?
Yeah, that's
Gwendolyn
right.
Of Tarth. Of
Where's the big woman?
Phasma, yes.
Exactly. Gwendolyn Tarth of Phasma. No, you know, she was Lucifer in the Sandman show on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And she did an amazing job. So yeah, they're all connected. They're all supposed to be the same Lucifer. But then again, I mean, it's cool. You know, Lucifer is the devil. He could change shape. He can look like whatever he wants to.
Yep. Yeah,
really, it works. But anyway, coming back to the Keanu movie, it was dark, it was fun, it was scary at times.
Yeah, it's a good horror movie. I like it. Mm-hmm. I like it, and I want to see a sequel. One more person in that movie is, I can't say his name, Digimon Hanso.
Oh yeah, it's Midnight.
What is his name? Yeah, Papa Midnight is a DC character.
Yeah,
so they did this stuff. They were somewhat faithful, and mm-hmm. I'm really excited to see what they do with this sequel, which is unannounced for when it will come out. But they say it's alive, which I was kind of worried about when the whole Warner Brothers discovery thing happened. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, I think, like you said before, have a little like an Elseworld tale with Keanu. And then it would be cool to bring him into the DCU, you know, with whoever the new Batman is going to be.
Yeah, different actor.
Exactly. I would love to see. So he likes, in the comics, he likes to hit on Batman because Constantine is obviously bi. And he doesn't do it because he's actually interested in Batman. He does it because he knows it bothers him.
Yeah.
And it does, like, Batman is definitely not used to this. He's not, he doesn't hate anyone, but he's just like, this is making me uncomfortable. And I think that that's great. I think that that's such a fun thing that would be a fun thing to see on screen.
Absolutely. I'd love to see these interactions. And I think, you know, if the studio allows them to have the creative freedom that they deserve, we will see the stories that we deserve. So
yeah,
let's talk about Matt Ryan, who in 2015 on NBC mm-hmm. got his own show called Constantine, and it ran for one season. And you have not watched this, right?
I have seen him as Constantine, but
that's not my question.
I have not watched this show. I can't find it anywhere streaming. I wish it was on HBO or Paramount.
Yeah, it's strange. It's not. It's strange. Maybe it's on Peacock. I'm going to take a look on Peacock since
I checked. It's not there either.
So weird. Whatever. I have to pirate that shit. But it ran for one season. It was good. It's funny because they didn't have him smoke at all, which was one of the downsides of it. But they fixed that in the when he came over to the Arrowverse. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. But this show is cool. It set up a lot of neat things. It his character, his Constantine, is spot on. And I love it. And I think that because of his popularity as Constantine, that he got those role, he got the voice roles in the animated movies, little series there, and more. So Matt Ryan's, you know, it's been almost a decade since he took on that role, but his impact on the character is huge. What do you think? I want you to watch that show.
Yeah, I want to watch it, and I'll search for it when I go upstairs. Maybe it's, I don't know, I'll check all my streaming services. But either way, I liked Matt Ryan. I watched the show Legends of Tomorrow. That's it. There you go. And I saw him on that show. I did not like that show, but I don't
that's
like
too bad. That's the best Arrowverse show there is, because it doesn't follow the. It's a great show. If you the. Never mind. I'm not going to sit here and talk to you about the hero first. No.
No, but I liked Rocco. Him. I liked him in the show. I thought he was great. And it
well,
was
let
like,
me let's back up. Yeah. There. Because when the show got canceled,
yeah,
they and it was sad because I was like, I want more of this show. They decided to bring him to the Arrowverse because his portrayal was so popular.
Yeah.
And they brought him into the fourth season of Arrow.
Yeah.
When did you stop watching Arrow after the second season?
Third season.
Third season. So yeah, this is just... right after you stopped watching.
Yeah.
This is when they brought Sarah back, and he was a big part of that.
Okay.
So he was brought in to resurrect Sarah. And that was the whole setup. Who can we get to resurrect Sarah? And it was John Constantine. Everybody's like, oh my God. And so he was back and he had a role again. And, which is fun because I think they did a neat job with the shared universe in most aspects. I think that they did a lot of deep cuts on that as well. And the best thing about it was that when he moved on to the Legends team, they were able to actually kind of finish up the storyline from the NBC show. And give some closure to that.
Okay.
And so that was a pretty neat season. So he shows up in the third season of Legends, and then he becomes a regular on the fourth season.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I watched him on the third season. I did not watch him regularly on the fourth season, but I can rectify that. But the list of animated films here.
Yes. It's a lot.
I've seen almost all of these.
There you go. So the first one that was, it was Justice League Dark, which is basically a take on the 2011 series. Mm-hmm. Let's see what happens. Of course, they put Batman in it, which is fun. Yeah. It's great. He gets the voice role there. City of Demons was originally put on the CW Seed, mm-hmm. which was their free streaming service, as individual episodes. Which they eventually compiled as a movie. And it's super dark. It's awesome.
It's on HBO. Yeah. I watched it recently. It's very dark.
All the stuff they did for the Seed, all those cool animated ones that were kind of in the CW verse are dark and very, very cool. The Vixen one, whatever the other one was from World War II, but, good stuff. So City of Demons, you know, you watched that. So I'm glad you did. I love it. I love DC animation. I think that it's very adult. And watching John Constantine portrayed by Matt Ryan's voice was even better because we've stepped away from the TV verse, which is one thing, but here we are in one of the greatest like renditions of comic books that I've seen in the last, 20 years.
So. Oh, for sure. And Justice League Dark, Apocalypse War.
Yeah.
That movie was brutal.
That was meant to close out this whole era of DC films, which was a really cool thing that they actually ended it with.
Yeah.
A Justice League Dark movie.
Yeah, it was. That was brutal, though. Yeah. That was a brutal movie.
not for kids.
No.
But I, you know, then they relaunched basically like a rebirth in the animated movies. And I'm still waiting for a larger Constantine movie, but they've been doing these really cool anthology collections since, you know, the conception of these movies. And so one of the newest ones was called the DC Shorts. It's a Constantine House of Mystery. And then there's other ones on there as well, portraying other characters, but it's a short, but again, very cool, very adult, and just a good Constantine story.
No, for sure.
Have you seen it?
The House of Mystery?
Yeah.
No, I actually have not. So I have. This is when he goes into each room, right? Or it keeps reliving the same thing over and over and over again at the beginning, and he realizes, yes. So yeah, I've watched this. Yes.
Cool. Yeah, exactly.
It was
again
good.
Matt Ryan.
Okay. I actually did not know that that it was Matt Ryan. I did not pay attention to that. But I mean, yeah, he does the voice. He's what I expect him to sound like, I guess.
It's how I read it now.
Yeah.
Kind of like, you know, I always have with
Kevin Conroy and Batman.
Thank you. Kevin Conroy and Batman. Thank you. Last up on the Matt Ryan charts, Harley Quinn, the animated series, season 3, episode 5. It's a Swamp Thing episode. He's on there as Constantine. So great show. I love that they brought in these characters to that, because they've done a good job spanning the DC universe.
Yeah, they really did a great job absolutely skewering the DC universe in every way, shape, and form. If you're not watching the show, it's like Family Guy and Drawn Together met up and had a child with the DC universe. And that's where you get Harley Quinn. It's a Swamp Thing was probably one of my favorite episodes. And the fact that they made Swamp Thing like a bro with like a man bun and like, oh, I have to do my morning matcha. Like, and, you know, waiting by a granola stand to get his granola and like having Poison Ivy having a complete like regret bang with Swamp Thing. Like, like, oh my God, I felt like I had to sleep with him. Like, you know, that was a great episode. That was just such a great episode.
Absolutely. Good show. If anybody out there has not watched it, check it out. It's got really deep cuts and funny stuff.
Kite Man.
Hell yeah.
Kite Man. I love it
because I fell in love with that character when Tom King did that whole, like, created that whole spiel for him. Was it during his Batman run, I think? And when they brought it onto that show, it was so genius because it was just, it was the perfect setting for that.
And he's just such a great douche. Like, he's just a douche. And awesome. I love that.
Who's Sir Gold Devil?
Yeah. Yes. Almost. Wow. Yeah. And I do love the way they just absolutely mistreat and psychologically abuse Bane. It's just, well, everyone else has a nice rolling chair. I just have a folding chair. Like, shut up, Bane. Why don't I have a nice chair? Why am I the only one with the folding chair? It's all angry.
The best part, it's like the Tom Hardy one too.
Yeah, with just, the voice. And he's so lonely. He's talking to cashiers at the grocery store. And I told them this was the last time they would talk to Bane that way. She's like, sir, it's, you know, $9.24. Okay. Let me see if I have the change. it's so ridiculous and so great. I love that show.
Me too. I hope it never ends. Yeah. But like all good things, our show must end. But I did want to mention a couple honorable mentions to be redundant. Because you watched the Sandman show, right?
I did.
I did not. So I want to ask you a question about Joanna Constantine, because originally they wanted to feature John Constantine in it, but they decided not to. And so Jenna Coleman plays this character who is what? Tell me.
She's like a, technically, she's a female Constantine. And the story of Constantine is that all of his lineage are sorcerers way back and way back. With her, they did the same thing, but it was all women. And they did a flashback to her ancestor, which she also played. So she played her ancestor, and then she played Johanna Constantine. And Sandman goes to her looking for his relics that he needs before he can go back to the dream, back to the dream world. And she kind of helps him navigate that. But her being a powerful sorceress, you know, he's able to directly, like, communicate directly, like, work with her knowing who he is. But again, like, I don't understand. Like, she did a great job. She was a female version of Constantine. She just, like, was a cynical kind of a bitch, powerful sorceress, where he's, you know, a dick and he's a powerful sorcerer. So, like, same idea. I just don't understand why you just couldn't get Constantine. Like, why couldn't it just be Constantine? It was fine. I didn't hate it. She did a great job. But why wasn't it just Constantine?
Ask Neil Gaiman. Because I'm not going to argue with him. Since he is the, you know, I don't know. I remember reading something about it, but I can't recall why they made the decision. But, I mean, they made Lucifer Gwendolyn Christie, you know, so some gender swapping there. I think that with everything that's going on, why not? If you can justify the fact that this actress can carry the role and do the same job and give you the same feels, fine. Because it is kind of set outside the DC verse, where you go back and be like, John Constantine is this. The Sandman universe, for general audience, they're not going to get it. But I don't, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I think too, though, that gender can be done very well. Like Desire was played by, in essence, a genderless, androgynous person who was also beautiful. And it's really tough to explain until you've seen the character. This is a beautiful character that could pass as either male or female, does not have a gender, but they are beautiful. And I thought using that as Desire, as the personification of Desire, I think was genius in playing in that sandbox. I think that was genius. I don't really understand the Johanna thing. like I get that. That's fantastic. That was amazing. That was an amazing use of that wonderful, wonderful actor. Incredible stuff.
Maybe that's their idea, is just to change it all up and just experiment with it and see how it works. And it worked.
You haven't watched Sandman? Good, right?
Not yet. I'm on it.
Is it on your list?
Oh yeah, everything's it's on there.
It's very good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Like I said, I've never read it, so I actually want to read it and then watch it, or vice versa. I'm not sure yet.
I only read the first issue, and it matches the first episode quite well. But Neil Gaiman did both the show and the comic. So for me, I was reading the show, which I thought was super cool.
There you go. If anybody's going to do it right, it's the person who wrote it. So
exactly.
Last up, we talked about an audio drama last week, or last episode, when we talked about Wolverine and The Long Night. But I want to bring up this. The Sandman audio drama got a lot of recognition when it came out as a big production. A lot of famous people in that. But John Constantine does appear in it in the episode A Little Dream of Me. And he's voiced by Taron Egerton, who also played Elton John and was the Kingsman. And
yep.
He's a great actor. So I need to check this out because I've been meaning to. And I believe this is also a retelling of the original story.
Yeah, I would. I should listen to that. There's no reason not to.
I agree. So you have some homework, and I have some a lot of homework.
Absolutely. I hope I can find Constantine streaming somewhere because I'm going to watch it tonight. You watch.
Yeah, I'll take a look. See what I can find as well for you.
Sweet.
So, anyways, that's an episode.
Yes. Good. Thank you, Casual, so much for hanging out with us to listen about our friend John Constantine.
Yeah, seriously, it's fun to be somewhat casuals and talk about it as well. But you know, I think it's great that you and I can both bring different perspectives into this because you've dug into this newer stuff more. And you know, I think that's the fun part of the show. And I hope that, you know, everybody that listens out there is learn something, or gets in, you know, inspired to watch something, because comics are cool. I've loved comics since I was a kid, and you know, they've just become even greater and grander in adulthood because they become something different, and the way, the perspective that you can take on them, plus exactly. The zeitgeist we're in, you know.
Exactly. No, you're exactly right. And remember to casuals that Chris and I were once casuals, and all it takes, like, from my perspective, is what I did. I went into a local comic book store with a vague idea of what I wanted, very vague, and I went to the person who works there but also owns the place and said, hey, listen, I've been out of the comics game for a very long time. I don't really know much anymore. These are the superheroes I like. What do you suggest?
There you go.
And then buy what they suggest and take it home and read it and see if you like it. And if you like it, go back and get a subscription. If you don't like it, then ask for something else. Then look for something else. There is something for everyone in comic books. There's horror. There's romance. And they're better than the movies. Honestly, they're better than the movies. And they just always will be.
I absolutely agree. So, you mentioned Critical Mass earlier in the show. Why don't you plug it?
Yes, unfortunately, Critical Mass is rated N for nobody because nobody should listen to it. It's vile, hot garbage. we just did an episode on the road where we drove 3 hours and recorded most of that trip. You should check it out. It's me, Dan, and Adam, and some new crew that joined us while we were driving. It was a lot of fun. So check out Critical Mass on the Road, coming soon.
Sounds like a blast. You can can't wait to listen to that. You can also check out Tally Talk. My friend Casey and I do the Geekly News, so we talk about everything that's new and happening in pop culture. We're on episode 241. So we check it out. Anyways, it's been a great episode talking about John Constantine. What a cool character, a great addition to our LUC Dark, as we're calling it. And look forward to everything's falling apart over here. And look forward to a few more episodes coming this season. We have some special stuff planned, and we'll be talking about dark characters and dark storylines.
Yes, and always remember to support your local comic shop.